Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe, and we've got a party cast here tonight. Purnell's here, Chris is here, Andy's here, and Brooke's back. Woo!
Thank you, guys. Fanfare, I deserve.
How are you, Brooke? It's been a while. How's things going?
Pretty good. I know. Yeah, it's been a long time. Things have been all right. Things are up and down. But the good news is my panel went really well. We sold out the house. Not sold out the house. That doesn't make any sense. It's free to go.
But you sold it out. Yeah.
Yeah. It was cool. Yeah. We actually had to turn a few people away. It was crazy. But the craziest thing that happened that I wanted to tell you guys about was I had an upcoming, like, you know, Andy Atome, I wanted to highlight because I just think it looks really amazing. It's really high quality work. And I was in the elevator going up to my hotel room, and I was just really freaking nervous because I had flown in and I'm in Los Angeles and like I'm around people. So everybody in the elevator, I was like, oh, y'all ready for AX? What up? How's it going? And one lady's like, oh, yeah, I'm promoting my game here. I was like, what's your game? And it's the freaking one of the three games I was highlighted. Dang. She gave me all this crazy like bookmarks and merch. It was insane. And I just like started screaming.
What game? Is it something that's been announced or?
Hold on. Salvus is in the name. Let me pull up the whole name.
It's an anime title, so it's got to be a mouthful, right?
Yeah, it's made by an American creator, and the art's just top notch. I actually didn't realize it was like such a small team because it looks like a main release game. And it was so cool. She was like, hey, give out as many of these fancy bookmarks that are laminated as you want. I'll come get the rest later from your room. I was like, yeah, sounds good. And like I forgot to grab one for me and I didn't get one because they were gone. But it was really cool. So what's That's up with rad. You guys? It's been like a month. By the way, the game's called Salvus Aries. There we go. I couldn't remember the Aries part. Probably because I'm a Virgo. Virgo and Aries don't get along. Am I right? Back to you, Andy.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
We got along great. Shoot.
Brooke's back.
Hell yeah.
All the hits.
Oh, it's Andy's turn.
That was the full pass off. That was the official.
That's the handoff.
It was so smooth that you didn't notice.
I didn't even know. I'm caught off guard right now. Classic Brooke catching me off guard.
Classic Showtime Sperry.
Ooh, yeah. Coming in late and not knowing what's happening.
How was your Metal Monday this week? I missed it yesterday because I just did not want to get out of bed.
You know, you have this little device in your pocket at all times. It's like a supercomputer that you could have jumped in and hung out with me.
It's called a book.
A tablet, yeah.
But when my eyes are closed and my brain is sleeping, I can't do that.
Well, wake that brain up, dude. No, Metal Monday was good, man.
Yeah, you just need more caffeine.
I do.
A lot of caffeine.
You'll get there.
I got a Mellow Yellow today, so.
Ooh.
I got Red Bull, the Sea Blue edition.
What do you got?
What is that like? Wait, let's back it up. What's the Sea Blue edition flavor supposed to be? Is that like
It's supposed to be Juneberry. It's like probably the most mellow like Red Bull ever. It doesn't have much tart to it at all. So it's kind of just nice.
Now they're just making berries up. I swear to God.
Yeah. What are you drinking right now? I wanted to try it because I like to interpret it as being the Sea Money edition.
Oh wow, love it!
Oh,
back.
They got June berries, they got July berries.
Yeah, exactly.
They better have July berries. Yeah, what did he say?
Yeah, right. The June berries might be out of date.
Yeah, that's expired Red Bull you got there.
Yeah. Anyway, June Sperry, I was interrupting you.
it's back to me again. I feel like this is we're like playing Uno now.
Well, Purnell Prime
card constantly.
Well, you explained about phones, but like I don't feel like He asked you how your Metal Monday went, and I don't even know the answer that you gave him.
I don't even know. Metal Monday was good. we played a lot of songs as usual. If you guys don't know what Metal Monday is, I stream and I play a bunch of like Clone Hero songs. People just in and ask for songs. Cool. You know, I'm not very good at Clone Hero. I'm actually like pretty terrible, but we all have a good time, you know, and laugh at me
for scrub.
Making audio mistakes constantly and.
Yeah,
trying.
That's cool.
So, it was good though. We played a lot of cool songs. Tried some hard stuff. We played a song that was like the Mega Man medley,
ooh.
And it's like 13 and a half minutes long of just pure insanity.
If you want a medley,
I broke down like in the middle of the song too. I was like, how long is this? Like, going into it. I was like, oh, it's like a 5 minute song. You know, like each Mega Man track is like a couple of seconds long or whatever. I was like, oh, we'll be through this quick. And I broke down in the middle of the song. I was like, I don't want to play this anymore. Like, it's too long. I don't want to do it. We finished it, but man, never going back to that one again. So.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, crazy. Man, I'm looking up. There's a really good medley, but it's only a Rock Band 3 file, not a Clone Hero file. So you wouldn't be able to play it.
What is it?
It's a little ditty called Crystal Flash.
Ooh, I like the sound of that.
It is the entire Super Metroid soundtrack in one medley.
Oh man, I'd totally play. I'd endure 13 minutes for that one.
It's 22.
Oh, well, I'd endure the 13 minutes and then quit.
See,
no, you would endure all 22 because it is amazing.
Metroid.
I should play it this song or on this episode. No matter how long we go, I should play Crystal Flash.
Send it my way too. I want to check it.
Yeah.
Made by Vert.
I was gonna say this is how Metroid pilled I am not. When he said Crystal Flash, I was like, oh yeah, like in Mega Man 5. And then I realized, oh yeah, no, that's Crystal Shot. So I was like, I don't know what you're talking about anymore.
My new sub sound just went off in a word.
Oh, I did.
I'm guessing you guys didn't hear the yay, did you?
No, I did not. I
didn't hear it.
No.
The new sub sound is
yay!
Nice.
I just heard that good. And a ding. It's like a sub came in. Root Beer, thank you so much for the 55 month sub. Always a pleasure having you hang out with us. I'm so happy that sound effect worked because the fucking yeah wouldn't for the longest time. Nothing would work on Streamlabs, but yay! Apparently works. So we have a winner.
Amazing.
Good shit. So yeah, Crystal Flash, 22 minute Metroid medley by Jake Kaufman. You might know him as the guy who did like the Shantae soundtracks.
And Shovel Knight,
yeah. Unlocked.
Oh, sweet.
Legend of Kay, that's a fun one.
DuckTales Remastered.
Ooh.
What a classic.
That is a classic.
A classic.
We passing it off. Crystal Chris. Dude, what's happening?
Yeah, I'll talk about my weekend. It was pretty good. My band Super High Tops got to play at Classic Game Fest, which is the biggest retro gaming event in Texas or something.
That's awesome. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I played there many, many times. The very, very first video game cover show that I ever played was Classic Game Fest 2, which was in 2009. So... That's how far back I go with it. But yeah, anyway, the cool thing is that among the other guests this year was the Audacity Games development team, which is, if you didn't know, it's like a modern retro game made up of real industry legends. I'm talking Gary Kitchen and his brother Daniel Kitchen and David Crane, who you may know as one of the original founders of Activision back when they were like a video game company, like they just made video games for the Atari. Yeah, they're actually the first third-party developer for like gaming because like every other company that made games also made the hardware, but they didn't. So, you know, just to... Like, their list of games is in the hundreds that they've all worked on. So, you know, I shouldn't go too far into it, but like things like Battle Tank, Boyna's Blob, Crystal Caverns, Kung Fu Master, the original Pitfall, and Pitfall 2, which is the first Atari 2600 game with a full soundtrack, because David Crane had to invent a whole separate chip to put on the cart so that it could, so they could make the 2600 actually play music. Like, that's how far back these guys go.
Damn.
But I really, my personal hero of the trio is Gary Kitchen. He made, you know, Battle Tank and like a whole bunch of other games from back in the day. If you look at his list, you'll see a lot of stuff that's like, oh yeah, I know this whole thing. But the one, there's like one game that he made that, that I particularly always associated with him. And that's a, basically it's Battle Tank in space. It's called Destination Earth Star. It came out on the NES in 1990. I got a copy back when it was new, along with my copy of Snake Rattle and Roll. And, yeah, like 8-year-old me, really, really adored both of those games. And, Destination Earth Star, like I said, it alternates levels between being a first person, like spaceship game where you basically, move around on a grid and like go to warp speed to like move to a different part of the grid. And, then you know, dogfight with other spaceships and stuff. And like I said, it's, you know, in first person, so you actually get to like see them on your screen and shoot at them with like the reticule and stuff. And even though it was a budget game, I actually thought it was really cool. Oh, and every other level is a shmup, so it's officially the first shmup I was into. Just a, you know, standard side-scrolling shmup that actually tended to be pretty hard. They made hard games, but yeah, I got to talk to him about it, and it turns out when he was, like, creating the algorithm... See, because Battle Tank, if you don't know, is the same thing, it's just you're in a tank and on the ground. So you're driving around a tank, and then you aim at other tanks and, like, blow them up and stuff. And, you know, it was also good, but like I said, I was talking to him about it, and, like, when he said he was developing the algorithm for Battle Tank, he was like, you know what, this would work way better in space. I actually really want to make a space game. So, like, Destination Earth Star was, like, the game he more wanted to make, even though, you know, if you know your NES games, Battle Tank is actually called, fully, Gary Kitchen's Battle Tank. So it's, like, that's the game with his name on it, but Destination Earth Star is the game he really wanted to make, so. And it turns out we have the exact same musical taste, too, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
And by the same token, if you know A Boy in His Blob, you know it as David Crane's A Boy in His Blob, and actually all three men worked on it, so. Yeah, it was really, really cool to, like, meet these guys and see their panel and, like, you know, get a picture with them and stuff, so. I was happy about that.
Very cool. How'd your performance go?
It went great.
There was an Earthbound cover?
We did a 4-song Earthbound medley, which we have done once before, but I felt like that was a little early. This one was a lot more polished, and I think that that's going to be like the next one we commit to celluloid.
Very cool.
Internet celluloid.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it went really well, and it was very fun. And like I said, I got to meet some people that mean something to me.
Very awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Arnell, how have you been? You've been quiet tonight.
Yeah, I've been okay. Just going through the motions, you know, living the dream. So, getting games in and trying to function. That's about the gist of it for me. But it sounds like everybody had a pretty good weekend. I like it.
This heat is killing me. Our air conditioner broke today, and it has been off all day.
Oh, that's not good. Have you done any pricing for it yet?
No, we tried to measure it, and we have a through the wall unit. And from what I read online, through the wall units are supposed to have a universal measurement. Ours does not measure.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what we're supposed to do.
Now, when you say a through the wall measurement, are you saying like it's the equivalent of a window unit, but it just inserts into the wall and out the back instead of a windowsill or something?
Like,
I've never heard of a through the wall unit.
Yeah, it's pretty much built into the wall, and it goes through the house and out to the outside. I don't know what mechanically makes it different, but it's not hanging through a window.
It may be the measurements.
Yeah. So we don't know what we're going to do with that.
Because I think my apartment was like that. It was inside of the wall, but I didn't know it had a specific name. So I get what you're saying now.
Yeah, and they're supposedly universal sizes. But we took a measuring tape to ours a few times, and we're getting the same measurement, and it's not what we read online. So we're scared to get one and have it be 2 inches too wide.
Is there anybody you could contact within the town you live in and have them run out and do all the work for you? That way you don't have to worry about having the wrong product.
Not really. We just got to get in touch with, I think Ashley said her brother is going to come up and take a look at things and see if like there's extra room in the wall to put a slightly larger air conditioner in than what's there. But in the meantime, we just got a window unit in today that we didn't have time to put into my window before the show. So I'm just sitting here sweating my ass off.
Sally, I know that vibe all too well from the day.
Yeah, we'll get that in tomorrow.
I'm thinking that, anytime that Texas has a rough winter, like when snow actually falls and they like have to bring in like these trucks from out of state to like clear up the roads because we don't have our own snow trucks or anything like that. It's like, I feel like Texas should do everyone else like a solid and like send our air conditioner repair people out into other states during the summer. Because we're usually pretty good on air conditioning, as long as the power grid holds up, which isn't anybody's, any air conditioner person's fault.
Yeah.
So true, King.
So it's like, yeah, we should totally send our guys out to like, Pennsylvania and other places to help out.
I told Ashley we should just get in touch with an air conditioner repairman, have them come out, take a look at it, tell us what's wrong with it, see if they could fix it. And she was like, no, we're going to do this. She like tore open the wall below where the air conditioner is because it was dripping into the wall. And she has a fan pointed into the wall to prevent mold from, like, it's a disaster. Ooh. And I've been telling her for a long time, like, we got to get someone in here who knows what the fuck they're doing.
Yes, you do.
So hopefully soon, our biggest thing is we don't have the money to afford someone right now. We just dropped $900 on pills.
Yeah.
And that's why when people always tell me things like, hey, what do you need to save up so much money for? What's the point of saving money? I'm like, there's always a reason to have more money. Mm-hmm. Don't sit there and tell me.
Until you get to a certain level.
Every time we save up, something happens.
When you're buying up like social medias and stuff, then you're fine on money.
Damn, I was trying to figure out how to take it there. That was good.
Not there yet.
You're talking about the abnormal freaking ruling class stuff. I'm talking about 90% of society. I mean, there's always a reason to have more money. I will never reach a point in my life where I go, man, it'd be nice if I could buy another yacht.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe.
There you go.
Spare you a yacht, man.
I like the way you like, man.
I'd buy a yacht or two, Why not?
I mean, why buy a yacht when you could just survive having cancer in the United States of America?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Right? Now that's business.
Going ride. Glugs of wine are hard to be poured. I'm sorry.
Did you get into the wine? Your rainbow wine?
Yeah, thanks to you, Joe. Somebody else just liked the tweet. So I was like, man, I would have been like 10 minutes in. Nah, I got some cool wine at the farmer's market, you guys. I don't drink.
Gonna chug it all?
I'm a one and done type guy, but back in my day, I used to be able to hold them.
Gonna chug a lug.
Oh, man. So we got a handful of games we could talk about this week. Should we dive into these, or did anyone else have anything they wanted to chat about?
Has I'm any weekend gone unreported? What?
I'm
just glad Brooke's feeling better.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks, me also.
Thanks for having me Agreed. On tonight. It's good to be back.
It is very good having you back. You keep our asses in check. And if you go back and listen to, like, we did a show. It was me, Andy, and Purnell, and we went like 40 minutes without doing a review.
Oh, my God. Wild. I actually want to listen to that now, though. I got to know. That's awesome.
Wild.
Man, y'all have some fun. That's cool.
And like 20 minutes in, I was like, hey, are you guys ready for reviews? And then we just went on tangents for another 20 minutes.
I remember back when Tim and I were getting into Elden Ring, we had some 50-minute chats, and you were like, shut it down, guys. And we would, like, for weeks after, be like, well, what'd you do in Elden Ring? And it's like, no, let's not take it there again.
Our conversations over, like, toothpaste and internet. It's, yeah, like, not the best.
I mean, sweet toothpaste.
Now I gotta know.
We're pretty awful. We're out of control.
Was that the day that I was only able to join, like, at the last second because of my internet?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because
yeah.
You joined in, and we were like, oh, yeah, we're just about to start reviews. Yeah. You're like, it's 45 minutes. What the fuck were you doing?
Yeah. That was
having fun. Yeah. Having fun. That's what we're doing.
I had a good party. Time.
SML is a podcast so raunchy that Brooke Poole and Chris Taylor are the straight men. That's something to say right there.
I know.
Well, we know Aki's not the straight one.
Oh, no. My God. Forgot about Aki.
Hey,
Aki, if you're listening.
She's probably not. Normally, probably not. I'd see her in chat by now, but I'm going to message her and be like, Brooke said hey, and you weren't there.
No.
I was about to say quite the opposite. I'm almost betting she is in the chat right now. But
we would know.
Like, you may, this will be her cue to reveal herself. Like, you were wrong, Joe. Well,
Thimber's in chat. Whore's in chat. Duck Noose is in chat. Who else do we have here? Latino Heat's in chat. Moobot's hanging out. What's up, Moobot? Root Beer, Jordan. Goldeneye's here.
Thimber. We don't got Thimber.
Thimber's here. I said Thimber first, I think.
Oh, sorry. Okay, my bad. What up, Thimber?
I'd be wrong. Oh, Goldeneye redeemed a hydrate. I got to hydrate. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
Yeah. Cheers. I found Brooke's picture of the rainbow wine, so I went and liked it.
Oh, nice. Thank you so much.
That means another glass, right?
No.
One more glass.
I don't think that was the arrangement, but I'm not going to tell her no. Yeah.
Maybe after the review, yeah. Should we get to the review? Because that's what's leading us off tonight.
Yeah, let's get it done so we can have a glass of wine.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is Wordlets, developed and published by WordWorks. Released July 23rd on Steam as a free-to-play game with in-app purchases, Wordlets is a virtual pet game that harmonizes relaxation with productivity. Collect adorable items, customize your pet and its home, and bring your loving companion to your desktop to boost real-life tasks, enriching your daily routine with a touch of joy and motivation. Brooke, what is Wordlets?
As you know, Joe, you popped this game in our chat recently and was like, anybody interested in cute little virtual pet game? And I was like, oh, me. And I could say that held up, this cute little virtual pet game. It's definitely inspired by Tamagotchi, Neopets, Animal Crossing, that kind of vibe. It's free to play, but does offer in-app purchases. Every day you can earn currency. But if you want to do the big stuff, there's another kind of currency that you will almost never be earning in this game. No surprise, tons of games do this, but that's how it is. So let's talk about how why I compare it to Tamagotchi. I make this comparison because the game has all the same mechanics Tamagotchi games had, and this drives most of its gameplay. Every day, optimally, more than once a day if you really want to do it up, you need to be feeding your pet, and it does have food preferences depending on the type of pet that you chose. And that's not all. You need to be washing your pet. And if you don't know, pets get dirty pretty quick, unless they're a rabbit in the real world, which are clean and perfect and never require any cleaning of any kind. In fact, it's dangerous to give a rabbit in the real world a bath. Please only do this in emergencies only. In this essay, I will... No, I'm just playing, sorry. Back to what you need to do for your Wordlet. You need to be cleaning up its poop. You have a scooper for that. And you gotta go around after it and clean it up. It doesn't make a lot. Unlike real-world rabbits, which can actually be litter box trained, like mine is, so cool. Something to think about. You need to be petting your pet. It needs affection. And if you don't give it attention,
I didn't know you could litter box train rabbits. That's so cool.
Okay, I might have to stick around and tell you more about that later because it's actually true as heck, and it's crazy. And some people don't know that even going into rabbit ownership, but it's one of the reasons that I wanted to get one small San Francisco apartment life. Anyway. Thanks for being fascinated by that incredible fact, Joe. Back to the Wordlets. If you don't give it attention and it needs way more than you think, it will cry. And can I just say, big same. So that's why I compare it to Tamagotchi. Why do I compare it to Neopets? Really one reason, pets. Who remember? It's a pet for your pet. This is my favorite part of the game. I gotta say, the shit took me back. And I thought the pet for my pet was even cuter than my regular pet in Weirdlets. It's like a 2D drawing of a little dragon that runs around. So good. We can barely interact with the little pet pets, but I'm so glad they're there for my pets. Really warmed my heart to see them running around. Also, spiritually, I feel like visually, all the pets in Weirdlets are heavily inspired by Neopets, also Pokemon. So why do I compare this game to Animal Crossing, if you haven't seen the trailer and intrinsically know why I'm comparing it to it? First of all, the game features slow, real-time advancement. You have daily tasks you can earn, a little extra in-game currency for these refresh every day. And their days are our days. There are some things you can only do once a day. Furniture you can decorate in this game. I think you only ever get one room to decorate regardless of number of pets you have, but maybe that unlocks much later. There's not a lot of options, but it's very modular, so if you do find furniture or decorations that you like, and there are some signs you can hang on the walls, for instance, that say bussin' or no cap or great. If you find something that you do have complete control over where it goes, we're not even on a grid here. The controls to move furniture are a bit wonky, but you can put anything anywhere, and I like that. There's also, basically, Red, the traveling salesman from Animal Crossing, the guy who has the shady boat who pulls up to your island in Animal Crossing, but he's not shady in this game, which makes me sad. But this definitely is a very young kid-appropriate game, so it's fine. He just has a little shop where he offers... Did I drop from the call, or was that...
Nope, you're still here.
I did, too.
Okay, cool. All right, nice. That
was weird, then. As far as I saw, everyone was still here, and... Talking continued, so
I heard
maybe
something
someone came
that...
in and left.
I'm
I heard it too. Someone probably came and went.
I started to get those, paranoid.
I have all I those sounds off because if they were live while recording, it would get so annoying.
Oh shit! I didn't think about that. Okay, that's smart.
So I never know when people join or leave.
Yeah, because if Aki wanted to pop in, that's cool. But I wouldn't like if I have my Google Notes pulled up like I do now. As y'all know, let me get back to those, by the way. All right, so you can put anything anywhere to the furniture, and I like that. And we have Red, the guy who pulls up to your island. He's the same in this game, but he's not shady. I wish he was a little bit shadier, but this is a very young kid-appropriate game, for sure. He's just got a little shop where he offers different items than the regular shop, and they change every day. And he's on a boat. Finally, aesthetically, this game just wouldn't even exist as it is without Animal Crossing. It's very visually inspired by it. This is not a bad thing, even down to the UI and a lot of the tool icons, and kind of audio inspired by it as well in its sound effects and just its chill vibe in general. Now, this game has some features and traits that none of the games I mentioned have. It has this desktop mode that we hear about from the description. Hey, this is a game for PC. I didn't actually even look up if it's available for some reason outside of PC and Mac, because it seems like the point of the game here is that it does integrate with your desktop and desktop mode. That's the main draw here. In desktop mode, you can do everything you can do in the regular game, only you can't see the room your pets live in on the island that you can decorate. And you can't, like, visit the shop where the boat pulls up to your island like Red and AC. Another thing that sets this game apart from the other games is, of course, the in-app purchases. And this game also has something called adventures. This is how your pet goes fishing, which can get you rewards. Every day you can send a pet on one adventure. The adventure takes 2 hours. Unlike the normal game, during these 2 real-life hours, your pet is not on the island. If you go into the game itself... He's not there. He's on your desktop in a boat, and he's sitting down fishing the whole time. Implying, I feel... It's cute. Implying, I feel that our desktops themselves are the ocean, and our games are the islands. Something to think about. Okay, so what makes the adventures really unique? Pause for everyone to whisper unique. That's in my notes.
I did it.
Thank you, thank you. I knew you would. If nobody got me,
I'm not sure I did it loud enough.
I didn't hear
you. Definitely didn't. It should have been louder, Chris.
Count of three. One, two, three. Unique.
Yeah, I got to do it too that time. Thank you. I always miss out on that. This is one of the two parts of the games where the adventures are one of the two parts of the games where I can see our pet stats come in at all. I didn't even realize we had pet stats until I sent one on an adventure. Turns out the pets have stats. You can increase your pet stats. You can increase your pet's luck by giving it its favorite treat. So rabbits love bananas. Rabbit shape, we have the pet Mochi, the bunny-type pet we can choose out of our 3 starter Pokemon. I mean pet. Comes as no surprise that Mochi loves bananas, but it comes as yes surprise that Mochi the rabbit also loves chocolate. Hey, My real life rabbit loves chocolate too. How do I know? Because anytime he comes into contact with it, I paid $90 to $300. Chocolate kills rabbits. In this essay, No, let's bring it back to adventures. Let me make it clear. I don't think that the creators of Weirdlit are doing anything wrong. I just wanted to bring back a recurring real-life rabbit theme. Okay, let's go back to adventures. Brooke, the other way that you can alter your pet's stats is by sending them on those adventures we talk about. Because every time your pet gets back to the island from one of those two-hour adventures, it gets a stat boost depending on a choice you, the player, make. The pet will have some issue. Maybe it fished for like an hour and didn't get anything. You're going to have two options. You can be like, well, little guy, life just sucks. Deal with it. I'm paraphrasing. I can't really remember the choices in this game. But there's always one kind of serious dark one. There's always one goofy one. So if you pick the serious one, the pet might get a boost to like trepidation or studiousness or something. You could also choose the other option. Otherwise, like, oh, I fished all day. I didn't get anything. It might be like, well, that's because you were cursed by an evil sea king I just made up because you're a silly little dumpling. And my pet will be like, oh, word. And then it's like plus one to Mochi's playfulness or empathy or something. You know, I don't have kids, but I gotta imagine that is exactly what parenting is like.
It is.
Thank you, Andy. Yeah, this game has a couple more things going on than what I've described, but that's it in a nutshell. Keep in mind, this seems like the type of game that, like Animal Crossing, is best when you play it a little bit every day for a very, very long time. I don't suspect this game is trying to be nearly as deep as Animal Crossing is at all, but I think we can probably unlock probably 100 furniture options total if I had to guess. But it goes without saying that I was giving a review code for this less than 2 weeks ago. I did play it daily since then, but I can't speak to the super long-term daily experience. From what I did play, very little change from day one to now. So I guess we can give it a rating. If we're going to give it a rating for... What do you want to do here, Joe?
Well, yeah, it's a free-to-play game, so I guess the question is it worth a download? Should people try this game out?
Kind of want to give it a flup it. Why not? I'm going to be real with y'all. I found this game cute and the premise kind of interesting, this wasn't a hit for me personally. I just didn't find it fun. Now, this is the kind of game you want to play a little bit each day for a really long time. But I didn't personally want to play it outside of reviewing it. It just wasn't my thing. But if you're thinking about it, it is free to try. While it wasn't for me, I didn't need to make any in-app purchases to make sure it wasn't for me, if that makes sense. And that's refreshing. While I don't play a lot of virtual pet games, I do play a shitload of free-to-play games, as y'all know. Not even for review, just for funsies. So I would know this game is not predatory when it comes to those in-app cash grabs. They're more of a leisurely cash swipe from a cat with sunglasses on who is lying on a beach. I was never coerced or paywalled doing anything I really wanted to do. And I didn't feel pressured at all to spend money, except at times when I was like, dang, sure wish I could have more than one pet so there'd be more to do in this game. Well, how much is a second pet? 2,000 jelly stars? Well, I get like 5 jelly stars a day, so it's not going to happen. But I wasn't mad. I didn't get the feeling that if I did get that second pet, it was definitely going to like make me want to play the game all the time. At the end of the day, I found this game interesting, but I'm also, you know, I'm not in love with virtual pet games in general. So keep in mind, this was my experience, but take it with a grain of salt, especially since it's free. You don't have to take my word for it.
How are the in-app purchases? Like, what kind of stuff do they offer in there?
You get a second pet. You can also get like different decorations for your house. I can see.
There's a lot of cosmetic stuff, basically.
I want to say cosmetic. I need to check it out because I remember clicking around in the shop, and they're actually really cool about like the review copy of the game. The animals acknowledged it and were like, "How do you even get a copy of this game? It's not time yet." And that was really funny too. And they were really responsive on Discord as well whenever I had an issue. So that was cool. But I
did they really ask you like, "What are you doing playing this?"
Yeah, it was like, "Hey, how did you even get this?" And I was like, "LOL, I actually took a screenshot to send you and I forgot, but I still have the screenshot." I have a few screenshots of this game if you want, where I have like the Discord of the server open, which was really helpful. I got to give the devs, like, even if this wasn't my favorite game ever, I did want to give a shout out to the devs. I came in with an issue and they like fixed it immediately and changed it for other players too because I brought it up. And that was really freaking cool. And, I don't know. So, but I did, that being said, I checked out the shop and I remember thinking even if I was going to spring for some of this stuff, it was a little steep for me, but like I said, I didn't find this game predatory at all or like paywalling you out of doing things. It does seem like you can play it infinitely at the same level and it's never going to lock you out. So if you enjoy the experience, I feel like it's safe to say if you watch like a tutorial of the game and you want to give it a shot, there's really no reason not to. And I think you're going to get a good impression of the game without paying any money yet. And I think there's something nice to be said for that, even if it's not my soulmate game, just friends. Yeah.
On the plus side, it's been what? A long time since the Bonzi Buddy was a thing. Remember that thing, kids?
What is that?
A little purple dude that danced on your desktop in the late 90s.
What? I'm about to
It was
Google
like
this.
Nothing but a virus.
Yeah.
So, okay, I was about to say, I know about the stuff for like your knockoff tablets when I had one of those for Atome games and I tried to like download a little kitty to hang out with me and like, yeah, it killed my shit immediately. So.
Yeah, this,
oh,
this
I
was
see
in
this
like
guy.
The
he
early
like
days of the internet.
Oh, hell yeah. Cool.
Stuff. All right, let's move on. Next game to talk about.
Bo,
Path of the Teal Lotus. Developed by Squid Shock Studios, published by Humble Games. Released July 17th on Xbox Series X and S, Switch, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Flow gracefully through a colorful hand-drawn 2.5D action platformer inspired by Japanese folklore. Engage in acrobatic aerial combat, unlock powerful mystical abilities, and explore an interconnected world of myth as you seek to unravel the mysteries of your origin. Andy, you check this one out. Give us a little info. What is Bo, Path of the Teal Lotus?
Yo, yo, yo. So we all know that accepting a heavenly blessing is usually much better than trying to harness the power of the gods, right? Like, right, Joe? You know that.
Of course.
Don't you know that?
Everybody knows that.
Hopefully everybody knows that. But generally when the latter happens, an ancient demonic skeleton beast rises up and wreaks havoc most of the time. This always results in a hero rising up to fulfill a prophecy, restoring balance to a world thrown into chaos and setting things right. And that's exactly where the main character Bo in Bo, Path of the Teal Lotus comes in. Game is heavily inspired by Japanese folklore. Bo is a prophecy-born Tetayana. I'm sure I'm going to say a lot of these wrong too. Or Celestial Blossom. These creatures are actually not born, but instead blossom into this world through celestial blessings. I'm going to give you guys a little rundown here real quick. As a result of sorrow or recent tragedy, Tetayanas resemble both the flower that was blessed and an animal creature from the local population. A mystical relic is gifted to the Tetayana as well in the form of jewelry or other fashionable items, which can be used as tools or weapons. They're also seen carrying a tea kettle, since various types of tea are their preferred source of earthly sustenance, and they will wilt or fade if they go too long without it. So the teapot in the game acts as a type of reserve health container, filling up when attacking enemies and allowing Bo to heal. Various teas will also provide upgrades to Bo's gifted jewelry. The Equinox Earring is what it's called, granting new powers and abilities to be used in the game. The earring can also transform and become various tools and weapons in the form of a staff, a bat, grappling gun, or even wings. These tools help Bo combat enemies and reach new heights and locations in the game. Very fluid and engaging combat couples with a combo system that ranks up consecutive hits, powering up Bo's other main weapon, a set of Daruma dolls. I think I got that one right. Daruma dolls.
I think so.
The Chomper. Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
It sounds close enough.
Yeah.
The Chomper, Kabumaru, Pyrokun, and Togi-chan are just a few of the set of eight obtained through the game. These Daruma dolls consume tea when summoned and each have a unique.
Unique ability.
One packs a devastating explosion, another a circle of spikes that protect Bo. Some even sail across the screen, biting everything in their path. That's the Chomper. Each is found with one eye and becomes more powerful once their missing eye is painted back on by an NPC. The last of Bo's helpful abilities come in the form of various Omomori or talismans, which can be equipped to give Bo extra health, attack, or other stat-boosting effects. The world of Bo, Path of the Teal Lotus, is, as mentioned earlier, heavily inspired by Japanese folklore. Hand-drawn, frame-by-frame papercraft art, pretty beautiful game here, blends well with the traditional.
Stunning.
It's amazing. But it really blends well with the traditional Japanese instrumentation. I don't know if I'm saying this right. A shamisen. That's like the kind of guitar looking thing with the big pick, right?
Yeah, correct.
A shamisen hitting its final notes right before a boss encounter to the stunning visuals of the bamboo forest and ancient Japanese temples. This game is a visual and auditory treat for the senses. It's easy to tell that the developers put a lot of time and effort into the details, and like overall presentation is incredible in this game. Mythical creatures from folklore appear in the game as ancient spirits or animalistic NPCs. Use your acrobatic skills to battle ancient yokai, spirits, and incredible demons in engaging and heavily fluid combat. Then you can sit back and enjoy a cup of tea and run quests for NPCs, gathering bamboo, teal ore, bunny blossoms, or other materials. Brooke, you like bunny blossoms?
Oh yeah, I don't know what those are, but full send, no context. Like, yeah. My two favorite things together. I'm glad I was unmuted for that by chance.
Bunnies and blossoms, heck yeah.
No questions asked.
Kodama creatures, I love Kodamas too. Kodama creatures can be found hidden throughout this world as well and unlock buildings and various upgrades to items, which can be purchased using Foxfire, which is like a type of currency found or gained when defeating enemies. Bow Path of the Teal Lotus presents itself as an action platformer or a sort of new age Metroidvania. I actually mentioned to Joe earlier that I'd categorize it as a more forgiving Japanese version of Hollow Knight or Ori. But honestly, the game really stands on its own. It's got engaging acrobatic combat, beautiful scenery and sounds, and a story that wasn't overbearing or at all hard to understand. Honestly, I have no complaints. I have one complaint. I have one small complaint. The lack of map marking system, which would have been really helpful for like some of the backtracking quests. Overall, a very enjoyable experience and a nice break from some of the more demanding Japanese-inspired games I've been playing lately. I've been on Sekiro lately, and it's been brutal. But
oh my god,
this one is good.
I bought that. I want to play it.
It's tough. It's real tough. But
I'm scared.
I'm loving it. You beat an enemy, and I'm so jazzed. I'm so jazzed. But Bo, Path of the Teal Lotus, I put in high marks. I mean, it's visually, like I said, visually and auditorily, like a treat. I mean, you look at the game, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful right off hand. And there's plenty of like gameplay, you know, that's like I said, very fluid. You're jumping around a lot. You're using your little hookshot thing to like fly through the air, getting combos, attacking enemies, you know, using your Daruma dolls. You know, it's really fun, and it's not like an incredibly hard experience.
Very good. Well, it costs $19.99. What is your verdict on Bo, Path of the Teal Lotus?
I say go for it. Pick it up.
Nice.
Great.
Very good. Any other thoughts on it?
No, I mean, that's pretty much it. Do you have any questions for me about it? I mean, it's a good game, but I can tell you more.
How do you make the O with the line over on a keyboard?
I am still trying to figure that out, actually.
All right.
I actually wrote it in on my monitor so that I could see what it was.
I just copy and paste all the time.
Oh, that works.
It's got to be like an alt 0453 or something. I don't know, something shitty like that. But
I think on my phone, I could probably do it. Like hold it down long enough.
Keyboards and it are good. It yeah.
I actually tried to do the same thing too. I like held down the O and it just gave me a bunch of O's.
A bunch of O's. Yeah. Man. All right. Well, Andy, that is it for you. We will let you get going. Brooke, were you going to stick around any longer or were you going to head out
I'll
as well?
Stick around a bit, but thank you for checking in.
All righty, Andy. Yeah. Always a pleasure having you on, hanging out with us. Do you have any final thoughts, final words before you head out?
I just want to let you guys know that if nobody else has told you today, you guys are all awesome.
Oh, so are you. Oh, my God.
You too.
Well, that's appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, have fun, guys. I'll be lurking.
All right, take it easy.
Peace.
Next game to talk about is Galactic Glitch, developed and published by Crunchy Leaf Games, released July 15th on Steam for $12.99. Galactic Glitch is a roguelike shooter with physics. Throw rocks, catch missiles, and rip apart your enemies. and use them as ammo. Craft your own builds from a large array of weapons and powers, explore the far reaches of the simulated universe and become more powerful, and discover its secrets. Purnell, what is going on in Galactic Glitch?
So, Galactic Glitch is, as you said, is a roguelike shmup, which, funny enough, I think that's, of all the roguelikes that kind of pop off these days, I don't think the shmup variants are very common, which makes this fairly appealing to me. And the idea behind this is that you are a ship traveling between various biomes that are interconnected, I guess like jelly spheres that represent individual gravity, you know, gravitational spheroids. And your goal is to go between each spheroid, taking out enemies as you go, hopefully reaching the exit with the boss room and then progressing forward. Now, when you enter a spheroid, you're flying your ship around, and there will be debris flying throughout the zones. And sometimes enemies will pop up too. Most of the time, enemies will pop up. When you're dealing with enemies, you have a few options at your disposal. You have your basic firearm, which you can employ with the fire button. You have a super weapon of sorts. Well, I don't really want to call it super, it's more like a slightly more powerful version of your basic gun that you can charge up over time and then let that go. And then you also, which is probably the biggest hook on the game, is you can also pick up debris with your gravitational tractor beam and fire it at enemies. In fact, it has its own damage percentage that is done based off of objects thrown. So they do intend for you to use throwing objects as a primary combat mechanic. It's not just a side note in this game.
Oh, man, I'm looking at a Steam page, and they have an animated screenshot, like a GIF of some of the action, and it shows someone picking up a rock, throwing it against the wall of an orb, and having it ricochet.
Yep.
And oh man, that looks so fucking cool. This looks,
and there's
like
an achievement for that too.
This looks like something that's going to be fun to find tricky ways to take people out.
Like, well, you might not spend tons of time going. You may not find tons of time looking for tricky ways to do crap, because you'll be flying around trying not to get your ass blown off. Because you are going to be getting attacked. And early on, enemies are fairly light and easy to deal with, which is good because it helps you get better at the controls and dealing with your surroundings. But eventually, you do start to get inundated with enemies that are like firing like full-on laser beams that are almost instantaneously zeroed in on your position, which is, at that point, you better have gotten used to the dodge mechanic or the boost mechanic, because they don't mess around. You'll be doing a lot of like hyperactive combat in this game. Enemies get dicey. And I do enjoy the combat. This game's a lot of fun. But when you go into a certain spheroid, you'll go in there with the intent being to clear out as much enemy activity as you can, if not all of it. If you pull that off, a lot of the time you'll get rewarded with a choice of, I don't know, additional upgrade. Now, this is something I never quite hammered out fully, and the developers listening, they can tell me what's going on here. A lot of times when you win a room, clear a room, you'll get access to a reward, and the reward tends to come in the form of chips. Say, for there might be a green chip that increases your, green chip that increases your throw damage by a certain percentage, a red chip that can increase your main weapons damage by a certain percent, and another chip, I think it's blue, that increases your mobility and such by a certain percent. Eventually, by way of getting currency and buying it at the shop after you clear a zone, you'll get access to more explicit powers, like new guns and stuff like that, or like new abilities for your run. But you can also take the chips you earned in the previous biome to upgrade those abilities, so long as the chip is compatible with the ability. Now, the thing that I don't know, and the thing I mentioned before, is the fact that I don't know if by using those chips, do you lose the percentage bonus that the chips give you while you're holding them. I assume you do, but I could never truly tell. I'm too busy just shooting and pewing. But either way, it will, once you get the handle of understanding that that's what happens, you'll be more selective on what chips you take at the end of a reward for a specific sphere, because you want to make sure you get something that's more so good for upgrading your gear, not just for the bonus that it gives you from the chip itself. There are various events that occur in some of these spheroids as well. You might come across like a boss battle, which is one that ends a sphere run. You might come across an extra difficult battle scenario where enemies start coming out of this portal at a rapid pace and giving you more than a little bit of a run for your money to survive. Of course, the reward for that, if you succeed, is better bonuses. So it's worth taking them out. You'll eventually go through the entire set of spheres available to you, which includes, again, these different events, teleport locations to get between spheroids quicker. And when you're done, you'll go, like I said, through the portal to another biome. But in between that, I mentioned one already, that you'll get access to a store to let you buy better, you know, bonuses and upgrade the abilities you've already acquired. But there's also a spheroid that gives you money potentially for either A, clearing out every room in a biome, or clearing the biome itself as fast as possible within a certain time threshold. I've never gotten the time threshold because I like to explore and I'm really slow and meticulous about it. So it's taking time and I've never pulled that off. But it's there. Respect. People just want to butch the game. And I do feel as though that I will say that they say it's an early access. And I think this is something I should mention in a sense. I'm hoping that there's more abilities that pop up over time. I'm looking forward to them adding more things. But it is worth noting, if you're like how I was initially when I played my first run of the game, you might be thinking, man, it'd be real nice if I got a different gun, though. I'm getting all these different perks and abilities and all, but I want a better gun. This gun sucks. Well, when you die for the first time, and it took me a while to die the first time, which is why I was getting kind of feeling that way. It's like, where's my goods? You gain access to a hub environment, and the hub environment is where you can use like a special currency you've acquired during your runs to unlock various spaces, like a weapon armory and an ability, you know, encyclopedias. You can see all the abilities you've unlocked on runs. But the most important thing, in my opinion, are two things. One, you gain access to a store that sells you new guns that you can then choose which one you want to take on a run with you. Think like kind of like Hades, where you choose one weapon and that's your entire run's weapon. But then there's also a skill tree that you can unlock and purchase upgrades for as well. So there's a lot going on here, but I still would like there to be more perk items and whatnot, more perk abilities or things that just occur during your run. With that said, though, that doesn't make this a bad game. In fact, I think the game is a lot of fun. It gets the atmosphere right. It gets the music right. It gets the fun right. And it doesn't feel like too much of a complicated mess. If I want to just come in here and not worry about min-maxing, I can do that and have a great time. And I do look forward to what they do with it next, but as it stands, I think it's a lot of fun what they've already got.
Well, you mentioned before, it is an early access. They plan to be in early access for anywhere from 6 to 12 months. They plan for the final version to have more bosses, more levels, and more secrets to find. The game currently has 7 of 10 planned levels, so more content will be coming. They're also talking about they need to find powers that are balanced and interesting, so I'm sure they will be fine-tuning the weapons and power-ups that come along. But as it stands right now, it's $12.99. Is this something people should dive into now? Should they wishlist it? Keep an eye on it. What do you think people should do with the Galactic Glitch at $12.99?
I am intrigued by their statement about more secrets, but I think it's worth playing right now. I mean, I can't guarantee people won't play it better than me and beat it on their first run, but I did enjoy what I've been playing of it. It's a good time. Worth a buy.
Cool. All right, shifting gears just a little bit. Next game to talk about is Ancient Phantasma, developed by Magitek, published by Kemco, released July 18th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Discover Sandoria, a realm born from the bravery of heroes Sage Roberts and Sir Sales, who defeated the Demon King centuries ago. As Dean, the young Lord of Sales, your adventure begins with a quest to defend your people from ruthless bandits. Join forces with the steadfast knight Flea and the determined messenger Crucia to confront a looming threat that endangers the entire kingdom. Chris, it's an RPG from Kemco that's not X-Create. This is Magitek. What's going on with this company and this game and all that other fun stuff? Give us the details.
Well, I will say the answer to that second question is not much. There's not much going on with Magitek. As far as I can tell, you know, through pages that are entirely in Japanese, they pretty much stopped making video games around 2015. So I think it's really just been kind of Kemco just slowly bringing out their stuff, like for going through the archives and bringing their stuff out now. In fact, I found even a thread where they were talking about whatever happened to Magitek, like from some internet users. And this is in like 2017, right? And one of them was like, "Huh, I guess we're never going to get a translation for Ancient Phantasma." Well, to that guy, I say, you're in luck. It only took the 7 years, but now we have Ancient Phantasma.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I found one person that cares, and I had to call them out, not by name or anything. They're never going to hear
this. I hope you found his email address and were like, "Hey, man, listen, I saw your going through some tough times back in 2017. Lamenting this about the lack of Ancient Phantasma."
Right. I'm almost sure that he would have figured it out, but I don't know. Anyways. So yeah, this one's for you, buddy. So yeah, Ancient Phantasma is a game that came out in 2013. So this is an 11-year-old originally mobile game. Like I said, by Magitek, and it's not Magitek like Final Fantasy VI Magitek. Like, that's probably exactly what you're thinking, because if you're an RPG fan, of course Magitek makes you think about Final Fantasy VI. I should hope. It's spelled with a C at the end, like Magitek. But anyways, yeah. So this is a like I said, a mobile RPG originally being translated to the Switch. Now, the thing about Magitek games, they do have some pretty cool ideas. I don't remember if I reviewed it or not. I know that I have Chrome Wolf, which is like, it's a JRPG, but it mostly utilizes tanks, which is, pretty cool. I mean, that's an idea that, of course, has been done, but, you don't usually see it in something that's like in the more casual realm, like this one is. But generally, they're kind of known for having pretty cool combat systems. I did review it. Okay, yeah. I thought so.
August of last year, you reviewed Chrome Wolf, episode 899. For the people who would like to go back, check that out.
That's there. Amazing. You go. Speaking episode, of 11 years ago,
episode with our faces replaced by langoliers.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Episode. Yeah. All right. Great. It's all coming back to me now.
Episode's ridiculous tonight. I love it.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah, basically, like I said, the RPGs that Magitek creates, usually a little more serious tone. We don't have outlandish kind of characters. We don't have super outlandish situations. The X-Create games tend to do things we've got the one where, you're partnered up with a talking wall. And there's also a game famously, it's famous to me, where one of your potential teammates is literally a filing cabinet.
we have three new teammates right now because Trivium Champ just raided us. Whoa. With three people. Welcome in, everybody. What? Thank you for the raid, Triv. We are talking about the game Ancient Phantasma, brand new retro RPG from Kemco. Is out on all platforms for $15. Chris was talking about it. Tell us a bit more about not having filing cabinet characters.
I was gonna say, yeah, Raiders, tag yourself. I'm the filing cabinet that is talking. anyways, so like I said, they're a little bit more serious tones. You don't usually find crazy characters like that. There is a secondary currency on top of the money that you use for armors and weapons. It's called app money, which is a little on the nose. You use it to purchase actually unlockables. You can unlock additional dungeons and things like that, but you can also unlock things that basically improve your game in certain ways, especially accessories and things like that. So that's pretty cool. And then, of course, it does have the purchasable, downloadable content, 3x experience, 2x damage, and no encounters. The story, like I said, it follows the Prince of the Sails. That's Sayles, called Dean. And Prince Dean. And an old Jimmy Dean and his close knight companion called Flea, I don't know. Basically go take care of some bandits, but then they find out that monsters are on the loose, so things are not safe for bandits anymore. And then they find out that the neighboring kingdom of Roberts is being attacked, and they go to save it. And then that's where our story kind of begins, is with a rescue mission. And then, you know, of course, things happen. I'll leave that to the players to discover. Like I said, with these, you know, even if when we're dealing with Magitek, a lot of it comes down to what are the systems in the game? You know, what am I going to play in this besides just, you know, taking turns bashing enemies on the head and letting them bash me back? So this one, again, it's not going to be as robust as one of the more modern JRPG offerings, but for, you know, 10 or 11 years ago, I would say it's got some innovations here. One is the ACL system. So that is the accelerated attack system or something like that. I don't really remember what they called it. But it's basically a setting that you can set your character to basically exchange speed for power and accuracy. So if you set your ACL low, like level 1, then your character doesn't act as much compared to the enemy, but their strikes will be strong and true. However, if you jack it up to like level 3 or something like that, you'll be able to use your skills much more often, but they have now a chance of missing and they may not be as strong. And of course, you know, like I said, you've got characters are customizable in the sense that you equip skills, and these skills are just equipped to a simple skill ring that, you know, slots unlock as you play the game. And like I said, so you can kind of customize your characters a little bit, like if you want one of your people to be more of a support role versus somebody that's going to do a lot more damage, or a healer, something like that. The game has a, you know, like a switching system, a little bit like Final Fantasy X, where you can switch out characters if, you know, once you have enough characters where they're starting to, you know, overflow from your original party. And so, yeah, you've got those two things. I was going to say, you don't have a lot of things. You have some things. Basically, yeah, it's, like I said, it's a little bit more standard of an adventure experience than, like I said, your Kemco X-Create things. There's not quite as much to say about it. Of course, all these things...
Is it fun, though?
Yeah, it is fun. I like it. It's got this one system where you do regular attacks in the game, and it does like a little... like, I guess you could call it like a golf swing type situation, where a gauge will like go up really fast, and if you catch it in the right area, then you can do an extra attack, up to like 3 extra attacks, depending on what weapon you have equipped. And, you know, as your weapons get stronger and more complex, so too does the gauge get more complex. So, you know, there's actually a kind of engaging, you know, rather than just hitting A to attack, you actually have to utilize some timing there if you want to get the most out of your characters. There's also, like I said, magic is actually Super Mario RPG style. They comes from a pool of SP, skill points, which is shared between all your characters. So if all your characters are using, you know, magic, for instance, then you're going to quickly run out of that SP. But if you balance it, because you restore SP when you do a standard attack, then you can kind of do a balance of, you know, some characters attack to regain SP, and then other characters, you know, spend it. Or you can, like, keep it at the top level, and that'll actually give you access to, like, some really great attacks, like even stuff like temporary invincibility and stuff like that. So as the monsters get stronger, you get to utilize more strategies like that. Again, not as flashy, but very solid. And speaking of not flashy, this is going to be one of those games that as soon as you start playing it, you will notice it's showing its age a little bit. I'm talking about not as many frames to move your characters around. Scrolling is not super smooth, so there's going to be a little bit of clunkiness there. Funny enough, you'd think that, well, that means I should play it in portable mode because it's a mobile game, but I actually found it was more pleasant to play on a television this way. But yeah, it's not going to be silky smooth like a modern X-Create game. That is to say, not all X-Create games, or like a Hit Point game, which those tend to be like the standard bearer for being really smooth. So if that's a concern of yours, then be aware of that going into your $15 purchase here.
All right. Well, it is $15. Your official verdict on that.
Well, I mean, this is a hotly anticipated title, so I'm going to say if you're the kind of person
who's been
chomping at the bit if you've been chomping at the bit for an English version of Ancient Phantasma, this is your chance. For general RPG enjoyers, you usually know what you're going to get in a $15, Japanese mobile RPG. And in that case, I would say this one's as good as any. Like I said, if you're $15, that's also the price of something that's more made in this decade. And if that is more your flavor, then I would say go for that. But I mean, I would like this better than another As Divine game, for instance. So, I'd say it's a more unique offering in the oeuvre of which I think I always pronounce that word wrong. Thank you.
I think it's oeuvre.
It's either that or just oov. I don't actually remember.
We had a local band called Forever Oeuvre, and they pronounced it oeuvre.
They should have called themselves Foruvre.
Whoa. Missed opportunity.
I don't know much, but I know how to name a band.
Man, now sure now do I play a completely unrelated rock song that no one has ever heard of at the end of this show, or do I play Crystal Flash?
that would be in the spirit of Ancient Phantasma, which, by the way, I'm going to go ahead and give it a buy it, just because I think it's cool, and like you don't see games like this all the time, even though it seems like you do.
All right, well, I guess I'll play Forever Oeuvre at the end of the show, and people can hear what they sound like.
Hooray!
As the former drummer from Breaking Ben in the band, so that's how I heard of him.
I love
next
that
game. All right, next game to talk about is Veritas, developed and published by Color Grave, released July 22nd on Steam for $6.99. Unshroud secrets hidden deep within the dark chambers of the God of Shadow, Veritas's castle. Persevere through monsters and mysteries lurking in every corner. Prepare to leave camp and journey into the castle's lonely halls by collecting resources and equipment to make it out alive. Purnell, tell us about Veritas.
So, first thing I want to say right off the cuff is that this game is a direct sequel to another game called Prodigal. If you are like me and haven't played that, I'm going to recommend you play that game before this one. With that said, if you find yourself being just outright stubborn and saying, I just want to play this one and only this one, well, I mean, I don't believe you'll be able to connect with the game the way it was intended if you do that, but spoiler, I still find the game to be fun. I just wish I were better involved with the characters. But I did buy Prodigal a little bit before this episode, before I even got this game, so hilariously, and I was like, oh, I'm already prepped to do it when it's time, when I'm trying to go back to it. But since we're only talking about this one, what is this game? Well, you play as a character who is a miner, and he's traveling with an adventuring party to enter the castle of the Shadow Lord Veritas, hence the name of the game. And the best way to describe it is pretty much like saying, what if classic Zelda was only the dungeon? Because that's pretty much what this game is. You're traversing a large castle that is made up of a series of interconnected rooms, trying to reach and defeat the Shadow Lord and save the land. As you progress through the castle, you'll have to be tasked with taking out various puzzles. A lot of the typical, use a key to unlock a door, but the key is found in a chest in a room another way around or whatnot. And there's a lot of activity taking place. I'm still here just making sure, right?
Yep, you're good.
Yeah, yeah. Can hear you.
Somebody must have dropped. I heard a boo. But
that was
Baxi walk around.
You don't, we miss you.
Brooke was like, this game sucks. I'm out of here. Brooke, no. So unlike in a Zelda game, though, you do not fight with a sword in this game. Instead, you are a miner, and as a miner, your weapon of choice is a pickaxe. So enemy comes at you, you wield the pickaxe, bam, you knock him out, and most enemies have a stun effect, so you can kind of just stun lock an enemy to death if you time your swings correctly. As you're walking around the castle, one thing I do kind of like about the game is that the NPC support characters are technically their support. They're considered to be exploring the castle with you. So you might walk into a room and one of your friends is there with some dialogue, or that friend might even be there with the intent being to help, be there as a means to help with a puzzle. It could be something as simple as a character say, "Hey, you need to hit that switch and you can't do it by yourself. Put me on it." And he'll ask you, put on the switch, you put him on there, bam, now you can go. You'll find lots of different thingamabobs and items as you explore this place too. Keys, food ingredients, utensils that can be used. And most of those things are used for construction. Like, for example, the food, there's a character that once you get to the camp, he will make food for you so that you can get like a berries, a buff while the food's in your stomach. Some of the other things I mentioned earlier that you find can be used with another character to construct upgrades to your pickaxe and your boots equipment so they can do different things or be stronger. And then there's more things, of course, as well. Graphically, the game is fantastic. It's very much a Game Boy Color game. And I'm pretty sure that's 100% intentional, because this is very similar to another game that I will absolutely be recommending before the end of this episode is over, because this is the prime opportunity to do it. But I like this game quite a bit. I feel as though there's the few gripes I have about it. Oh, I mean, I should also say, of course, it also has the generic, you know, the heart container and magic container element to it. But instead of heart containers and magic containers, there's just health shards and crystal shards. The health shards, you get 4 of those, you get an extra hit point, taking damage. If you get 4 of the other ones, you'll get a crystal orb, which can be used to do an enhanced version of your regular attack. Think like the spin attack or a leaping strike, a couple of things you can equip based on medallions you find in the game. And of course, there's also like dungeon items that can be set up. Though unlike in a Zelda game, you don't just necessarily use the equipable items from your inventory. Instead, you have to go to a character at your camp, your base camp, and he lets you swap in and out items based on the category they fit into when they're allowed. So you're moving around and exploring and solving with what you got. You're not just like pushing pause, bringing up this cool item and using it. And that's by design as well. The only real gripe I had in this game, 2 gripes really, and one is a half gripe. For one, and I'm positive this is intentional, and I think it's a half gripe because I think more games should force people to try to get better with this. But unless you could find it later and I didn't find one, there's no map. There's no map in this game. You better remember what rooms you're going to and what you are doing. Now watch Color Grade comes back and says, "Well, Perno, if you press the select button, you would have found your map." But as it stands, also I pressed select and it was not. But still, wouldn't be surprised if they tell me there's like this really easy way to access the map that's always here. But as it stands, there's no map. And in addition to that, when you get to the camp, which takes a little, like maybe like 30 minutes in the game or so to get to, you start getting access to the support units, like again, the chef and the equipment crafting or whatnot. The game does a thing where a character cycles through a series of dialogue options. So you'll talk to them and they might ask you about their service. Like, "Hey, do you want me to whip up a nice meal?" If you say yes or no, it doesn't matter. And you fulfill it or don't, it's done. And if you talk to the person again, because, "Hey, maybe you did want to make a food item," you have to hear like another multiple lines of dialogue for the next dialogue tree they've got, you know, set up in their programming. And then you might have another one. And then after that one, they'll finally ask you again, "Hey, do you want me to cook something for you?" And I'm like, I only want you to ask if I was cooking something for me. That's all I want. Just make me food. That's what you're here for, cooking. Or crafting equipment. But, I mean, you get used to it. I just wish you didn't have to do that. It'd be easier, it'd be better if it just, hell, they ask the question immediately. Like, maybe if they do a patch for this, say, "Hey, you always, whenever you talk to them, they always ask for the service first. And if you say no, or yes, I don't know, but preferably no, they give you some dialogue. And that way, if you're talking to them because you want the service, they'll always offer the service instead of making you run through lines of chat to get there. That's kind of annoying. But with that said, I think this game is actually pretty cool. I want to say this is a surprise, but it's not, because, again, I bought Prodigal with the intent to play it and then wishlist this one, and then I learned about it through you offering it as an option. So I already knew this game was going to be pretty legit. I was just able to confirm it now, so.
Well, it clocks in at, what was the price, $6.99? What do you think of it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is a buy, but in addition to that, because I have experience with it, but I bought it and didn't get it from the show, I also recommend from this company you buy their game Curse Crackers, For Whom the Bell Tolls. It is a really awesome 2D platformer that has Game Boy Color, you know, inspired, just like this one. And it is a ridiculous amount of fun for what it is. I think it's great. I want this company to make more games because they make great games. And I've played two of the three that I know they've made, and I know I like them both. So they are on the roll for me. And obviously, I'm going back to Prodigal because I want to know why I care. I should care about these characters. So,
all right. Sounds good. One final game to talk about tonight is called Pretty Girls Pop Match, developed and published by Zoo Corporation, released July 18th on Steam for $4.99. Embark on an epic journey with the adventurers as they navigate through this captivating three-tile match puzzle game. Chris, what is Pretty Girls Pop Magic?
All right, so yeah, the Pretty Girls series, which, by the way, I haven't really talked about them in quite a while. But, you know, I did review quite a lot of their puzzle games before. So, you know, go listen to our entire archive, and then when you come back, then we can talk about...
Yeah, we'll wait. This one. Go ahead.
Yeah, we'll wait. Go ahead. Okay, now that you're back...
Fall into the abyss of my gaping butthole.
Oh, we just got another raid. Welcome in, everybody, from Lloyd's stream. Lloyd Berry, thank you for the raid. We are just about to start talking about Pretty Girls Pop Match from Zoo Corporation on Steam. I literally just did the intro, so I'll do it again. Embark on an epic journey with the adventurers as they navigate through this captivating three-tile match puzzle game. Chris, let's start this one over. Tell us about Pretty Girls Pop Magic. Pop Match, not magic. What am I saying?
It is pop magic. Okay, so if you don't know with the Pretty Girls series, these are some games that like usually will be a kind of a classic video game puzzle game type of scenario that you're used to, or you know, traditional games like you know, they do some, like I said, more like I said, traditional stuff, but this one is them taking on the Bejeweled category. And the like I said, the catch of these is usually a little, at least one more thing apart from the fact that it's, you know, big old anime waifu ladies that are, you know, splashed across like the whole thing, and usually in collectible situations, which will this is no exception to that. So yeah, I'm very excited about this one because I love Bejeweled. However, I will say that, you know, they're very much taking on more than they can chew, being in competition with the likes of, for instance, Puzzle Quest, which is one of my favorites, like, just ever. Because normally, like, these games are very high quality, so it's they're usually surprisingly, like, the best thing going. I still put it forth, although I haven't played all of them, obviously, that the Pretty Girls version of 2048 is like my favorite version still of of that particular type of game. So they usually do a great job, and I think they did in this this game as well. So you do have three tile matching. However, it's not always that simple. This is basically presented in a kind of you know, JRPG kind of thing. You know, you've got your different warriors who are, of course, the aforementioned girls, and they each have special powers that will come into play during the actual missions. So you get a special playing field. Usually it's not simply a square grid, but and then, you know, you got your different color jewels that come up, but your mission may be something as simple as, you know, it always has a mission, so it's not simply a score attack, although some of them are. But it may be something like collect, you know, 50 green, you know, tiles, you know, pop 50 green ones, or collect these coins, which, you know, can't be matched themselves, but if something is matched next to them, then they get added to your collection, you know, or some combination of like some other things too. And as you, there's a main quest and a time attack mode. As you progress through the main quest, it unlocks more girls. And the other like kind of aspect to it is that, like I said, the girls have special powers that are related to the special items that are throughout the game boards. So basically, so for instance, there may be a sword icon in the playing field. So if you click on that sword icon, it doesn't have to be matched with anything. But if you click on it, it will destroy all of the adjacent jewels that are right next to it. And then there's a character, well, what's her name? Sonya, who, you know, she's like your paladin character. So she has bonus, stuff when it comes to swords. It enhances the sword magical item. Or like, you know, you got your other warrior who, there's rockets that will basically eliminate a full line for you. And the character Thena is like, you know, she gets bonuses from, or enhancements rather to the enhancements to the to the rocket item. Yeah, and then you've got a you know, like a magician who enhances the bomb item, things like that. And actually, once you collect enough special points in the stages, you can enhance the girl's enhancements. Which, by the way, is not dirty. It just means that they're more powerful at their thing. So yeah, lots of interesting things there. The in the quest mode, there is 100 levels to get through, so plenty of content there. And then once you're done with that, then you can basically, like I said, do the score attack, where you basically have like, you know, 3 minutes or whatever to just get the best score possible. Really though, that's kind of it as far as like the game modes. There's not a whole lot of like different things to do. But like I said, you can enhance the skills, you can do the two kind of quests, and then there's the diorama, which you may know if you've played many of these games. But basically, as you unlock different girls, you also unlock different backgrounds, different costumes, and a diorama allows you to simply place those girls in whatever costumes and, you know, poses and whatnot, like just on a background that you also unlock. So, you know, it's just basically setting up a diorama of your girls. Adds nice. A very dollhouse kind of feel to the thing. Like I said, we used to joke about these games being kind of erotic, and I think there actually is a version of them that is. But on its face, the $4.99 download you get of this is actually pretty tame. Like I said, it's just fan ladies. And,
they have big boobs.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It's, like, it's uniformly. Not,
these aren't Aki games. This isn't After Dark material.
No, it really isn't. We, yeah, this is absolutely, like, you know, your mom might have some questions if you're playing this on the family computer. She might chuckle
and be like, oh, what are you playing?
Yeah, exactly. But apart from that, no, this is just a really solid-ass bejeweled game. I had a lot of fun with it, and like I said, I don't think that, that this is the best Bejeweled game, because that is Puzzle Quest, but I think it's up there.
Very good. Well, it's $5. Your official verdict?
Well, $5 is kind of a flup it, why not, for me, because, I mean, Bejeweled games are, you know, there's every flavor under the sun, and this one I really like. Like I said, I like what the items bring to it. I will say that does kind of, you know, remove a little bit of the strategy, especially once you start chaining together items. You're just kind of like, well, you know, I could be tile matching, but actually it's more like, well, what does this item do? Let me, you know, get to it. But, I mean, it still keeps you clicking. I've been clicking on it through this entire review, so, you know, it's it's definitely one of those that'll grab you. So, I do like that about it. So I'm going to go ahead and say it's also a buy it. But,
sounds good.
Like I said, it's cheap enough that I don't really have anything to complain about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through. Chris Purnell, thanks to the two of you for being here the whole time. Brooke and Andy, thank you too for being here as much as you could. Thanks to all the raids. Thanks to Lloyd for the on-screen celebration of Coltrane, who has been on my lap routinely through this entire episode.
Nice.
Thanks to everyone for hanging out, keeping us company. Music this episode At least MP3 version, you're going to hear forever Uber's song, First Stone. YouTube version, if there's a copyright strike, you might hear silence. So we'll fucking find out together. Does anyone have...
We'll find out.
Pernell, give us some final words to end the show.
You're asking the wrong guy. I ain't got nothing.
Chris, give us some final words to end the show.
Wash your hands. Right now.
9 teaspoons of added sugar. There it is. There's something final.
Wash your sugar.